In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Welcome to EMS Office Hours. This is Jim Hoffman.
And this is Josh Knapp.
Josh, good evening. Well, I guess it's good evening, but it's still pretty bright out there.
It is, isn't it? It's that summertime thing going on. Although, I was, I had the occasion to look at, and this is sort of what we were talking about offline, is that, you know, I'm preparing for this. I was going to say stupid, and it's not stupid at all.
No.
I'm preparing really hard for it, so it's an important goal. I'm preparing for this race next week. It's
sure.
New York City Triathlon. I'm a little bit worried. I had a couple of injuries this year and a lot of bad weather. It was very hard to train and prepare for it, so I'm doing what I can right now. And so one of those things was I had a friend of mine who is a trainer, and he goes for his own health, goes out running in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of these guys that sleeps, you know, 4 or 5 hours. That's it. You know, I mean, he's lucky. One of those lucky people, you know, the lucky few that don't need a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
And he gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning. So if I wanted to go with him, and you want to know something, it was good sense, because even at 5 o'clock in the morning, the temperature was 82 degrees.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did my 6 miles, turned into 7 miles, and then I did my bike. I was done with my bike about 9:30, and it was approaching 90 degrees at 9:30 in the morning.
I guess you got to make sure you stay hydrated. You know, it's one of the most important things.
Oh, yeah. I went through – I carry 2 large water bottles on my bike, and even with that, I was completely through my water and did the last few miles dry, and that was
dry.
You know, you sort of feel it hitting you.
Yeah,
you gotta say, you know, this weather is no frickin' joke. It's no joke for our patients. I mean, how many dehydrated calls have? What's the rate of like senior calls that you have gotten? The skyrocket.
Yeah, listen, Josh. Before we go any further, I just want to mention about. EMS Manager sponsoring us.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Today, this episode is sponsored by EMS Manager. I just want to remind people before we get too much into the show that go visit them at emsmanager.net and get a free trial of their innovative and very easy-to-use EMS employee scheduling and management software. We're going to talk about it more later on in the show, but I just wanted to kind of give a quick shout-out so anyone popping in or listening right off can at least hear that and know that they can get a free trial of that software. No, Josh, you're right. I mean, you do see an increase in senior calls with dehydration and heat-related type emergencies. And, you know, this is something – could even be another podcast, actually, you know, when you talk about this type of stuff, because to me, this is the type of thing where EMS can really be useful to the communities that they serve beyond just responding and taking people to the hospital. You know, checking up on the elderly and educating them on what they need to do and who they can reach out to if their air conditioner breaks and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And we're not utilized in that way. You know, instead, they'll have us sitting in a garage, you know, watching TV or sitting on a corner.
What?
No.
If you're lucky, you're sitting in a garage, and more than likely, you know, your bus. I mean, in this type of weather, that's a good place to be. Honest. Yeah, you're right. You know, that's a good place to be. But, you know, and I don't know what the percentage is. Probably the vast majority of EMS work out of crew quarters. But, you know, here in the big city, in the Big Apple, and I know they do it in Chicago and a few other places.
Yeah, Jersey City does it.
Jersey City's big on it.
It's due to, you know, the proximity of hospitals and the call volume, and doesn't pay to have a station to respond back to and be in the station, you know.
Well, I'm gonna, you know, if it doesn't pay for them, then why does it pay for Fitney?
Well, they're firemen. They don't have it. Their call volume isn't as high as EMS.
Oh, that's another show. I mean, we're talking about all these topics that are just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, let me tell you
they?
Something. I gave you a bunch of topics today, and I don't think we're not going to get to all of them, but you know, I gave
but,
you some things, just throw some stuff out there, and we can
and
discuss.
And the one thing, you know, in the rapid-fire show, we're allowed to deviate from the
sure.
script, so to speak. And the
Absolutely.
One thing I really did want to sort of touch on, and I keep on circling around it, and I'll go right to it, is the idea that it's okay for us to function in a lot of systems around the country. It's okay for us to function in a substandard environment as long as our patients are in a relatively as comfortable as it can be environment. And I think part of the reason you got to have the AC in the back is obviously for the medical issues as well.
Yeah. And I guess you're talking about the picture that was on Facebook with the air conditioner getting funneled in from the back to the front. With
you know, it looked like a thing straight out of Apollo 13, didn't it?
Yeah. You know, I tell you, and I was saying that in the green room before the show, I was talking about how, you know, I've done that in the past. And you see, even it's amazing when you look at a lot of the comments there on Facebook, a lot of people say, you know, been there, done that. I've done that, you know.
A lot of people, right? I
yeah.
mean, no matter where you posted that, no matter how many page views
yeah.
you're on, it got a lot of hits.
Yeah.
It got a
pretty,
lot of comments.
Pretty. That's actually from the New York City EMS website, not the official website, that other
right.
one.
Right.
You know
well, you know, yeah, I know, but why aren't you mentioning it? Just you're afraid to get them in trouble, or
no? You know what it is. I couldn't. I actually got the picture from Google Plus, and I went to the website thinking it was going to be on like their main page. But you ever been to that site? It's just a rolling
yes.
site, and I don't know what page it was on. It's just like you know hundreds of pages, and it was taking me forever. I went through a bunch of them looking for it. I did not come across the one that pick was on. So I figured, let me just shout out the page itself. So,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
Yeah. But it's a, you know, it's a, and it's a shame that we have to have these sort of underground sites to keep us in touch.
Yeah.
Keep us up to date. But it just drives me nuts that, you know, and it's a little bit, I was thinking about it today as I was coming back from my run. Because, you know, it was hot.
Because you were hot. You wanted air conditioning.
Really, really. And it just sort of dawned on me, Jim, you know, forget the idea that there's a protocol or there's an idea that, you know, you're supposed to stay in service as long as the passenger compartment has AC. It doesn't matter if you have AC. Who comes up with that? Where are we so low on the totem pole that it's all right?
I did see in the FDNY EMS Facebook page where that was also they shared that picture. It did say that this year or last year they did change it so that the front of the ambulance also has to be air conditioned as well. But this is just a recent change, and I wonder if that's just a state thing, if that's an OSHA thing, if it's
I don't know because it's
you know,
I know. You know, I know it still hasn't trickled down to the privates. Let's put it that way.
You know, I wonder. You know, they talk about the what is it like 70 degrees or something like that? It's got to be the minimum, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on a hot day
for the AC to function, it has
yeah.
to be able to down to 70.
Got to be able to get down to 70 degrees. But I think
I think that's in an operational car. I think that's you know specs in a car. I don't think that has anything to do with because how often have you been in a bus and the AC is blowing out you know something akin to a hairdryer on cool? And
it is true though.
You know, and you're considered in service and good to go.
Right.
And you're
yeah,
just
God forbid you try to. God forbid you try to question.
Well,
you
but that's the environment we're in. And, you know, like last week I said, you know, I really would love to get more to that flight medic standard of anybody can scrub the mission. Anybody can say no go.
Mm.
And, you know, that really means more than just killing a job. It means that you have a say in what's going on in your work environment. And, you know, without getting too into that end of it, I think it's important when you're...
No, but you have a good point, though.
Well, you know...
What point do we not have... We have no say in the environment that we're working in, you know... You know, I mean, I've known people throughout my EMS exposure that would put a bus out of service for anything, you know. Mm-hmm. And I used to say, oh, my God, would you please just go in service and start nitpicking, you know. But some people take that mentality of things like, you know, safety, like John mentions in the chat, or comfort, like we're talking about with the air conditioning. You know,
well,
take it very seriously.
I was going to go that, you know, I'm sure that there are people who are working like McDonald's or working, you know, at some of these sort of low-end shops that are unfortunately equivalent to what people are getting paid in EMS, and they don't have much say in their work environment either.
Yeah.
But in when you're a first responder, I think that it's very important to have that objectivity of saying, everybody has ownership in what's going on, and from the lowest of low to the highest of high. And, you know, I know, Jim, that, you know, you've tinkered with hazmat. I know, you know, you certainly know a lot of what goes on. And when you're in a hazmat job, everybody has to be a safety officer. You know, everybody's there with eyes on the prize, and they've got to be able to say, hey, we're dealing with a dangerous situation, but, you know, do not proceed.
What's funny is, you know, well, not funny, but I guess ironic maybe. You know, a lot of the calls we go on, we're sweating to death, right, in this type of heat. Most people...
Because polyester breathes so well.
Yeah. You know, most people, these houses that we go to, for some reason, they don't have air conditioning, or they don't have it on. We're in hot lobbies and hot stairwells or working outside in hot environments and, you know, motor vehicle accidents and bicycles get hit and pedestrians that get hit. And, you know, the one thing that you can almost try to look forward to is being able to eventually get back into in front of the bus where there's air conditioning, especially when you work in an environment like New York City or, like I said, Jersey City or some places where they do that type of dispatching. That's like your only sort of, you know, escape, right? Is thinking about, oh my God, at least when I'm done with this, I can get into the ambulance where it'll be a little bit cooler, you know. But it ends up that, you know, if you don't have the air conditioning, or it's like you said, it's like a hairdryer on cool, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the type of relief that you get. But yet, you'll get management and supervisors and everything, you know, pushing to stay hydrated, stay hydrated, stay hydrated, stay hydrated, make sure you drink. Okay.
Right.
What about that air conditioner?
Right.
You know, I'm dying. I could drink all the water, you know, in the world, but if I'm sweating it out in 2 seconds because there's no air conditioning in the front of the ambulance, you know.
Well,
I mean, listen, it almost sounds, it's funny, like you talk about it, it almost sounds like we're being petty.
Absolutely not. You're a patient. You get this guy, you know, who's heaving and breathing hard and sweating and his clothes are filled with perspiration, and he probably doesn't smell too good after being 3 or 4 hours in that
condition.
You know, is that the person you want sitting down on a piece of your furniture taking your history?
Well, think about it. It goes back to what we talk about a lot on the show, which is perception, right? You got somebody coming in, and they're not the most kept now. They're sweaty, like you said. You talk about even half a day worth of working in the heat. Now they're going to somebody's house, and the perception is like, oh my God, this person's a slob. Oh my God, this person, you know, is you know, trying to take care of me. They're sweating, like a mule. You know what I mean? It's at what point? You know, again, that comes back, I think, on us, you know, on the perception of EMS.
And I think that, you know, I mean, going back to the very, very, you know, our original theme, we don't fix anything on the show. We talk about it, we discuss it, we get it out in the open, hopefully shine some light on it. But, you know...
I wish I was an air conditioning repairman.
Yeah. Especially
my dad. That's what my dad did growing up, and I went and helped him on calls all the time, but never really took an interest in it, and I should have.
Right, compared to EMS.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, that's a, but the, the whole concept of that, you know, if we can raise another argument, another idea, other than, hey, it's just uncomfortable, hey, it's not the right thing to do, hey,
right.
you know, give a shit about us. It's more important than that. It's your safety. I mean, you don't operate as well. You're not as sharp in that type of environment. And what are you? You know, they always tell us we're the ambassadors of the organization or the hospital that we work for, mm-hmm. you know, reaching out to the public, and we're supposed to put our best foot forward and keep a professional and all of that other stuff. Well, when you show up, you know, overheated, hot, and sweaty, it's real hard to,
yeah,
to do
again,
that.
Yeah, the perception of it. No, I think it's that's a pretty good, I think, segue, Josh. You talk about, you know, EMS that's in an urban environment, you know, and how they operate, you know, without, you know, sitting on street corners and all because of proximity to hospitals and all. I saw a question on Facebook that was asked about, you know, should those areas that are very urban, where the hospitals are very close, do away with ALS and just run BLS trucks to sort of, you know, load and go to every hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought that was an interesting question. I don't think it's, you know, besides being a medic myself and working in that environment, you know, not seeing that being a viable option, you know, no matter how urban it is. You know,
why?
Well, because I mean, there are things that paramedics can do, you know, yeah, in limited time in the back of the ambulance, that EMTs can't. And then on the flip side of that, you know, a lot of times the EMTs nowadays are, you know, conditioned in school to rely on paramedics. You know, they're not
conditioned. Oh, absolutely.
They're not conditioned. They're not trained to think for themselves, like everything, you know, chest pain, call for medics, difficult to breathe, call for medics, patients complaining, call for medics, you know, that's like a mantra almost, you know, and it never used to be like that. It used to be where, you know, when I was an EMT, I mean, it very rarely I didn't call for a medic unless the patient, you know, really needed it, you know, and if the medics were too far out, I would just transport. Nowadays, I got EMTs that wait on scene for me for forever.
I know some EMTs, it's a badge of honor not calling the medics.
Yeah.
I mean, now, not to say that they're irresponsible about
no.
it. They sort of make a judgment call, you know, what's the quickest source of help? Can we, you know, hustle this guy to the hospital faster or get medics on scene? Now, with all that said, sometimes the training isn't enough to recognize when
right.
help coming to you is probably a little bit better and will start the process going faster than driving. Let's say, you know, your medics are 15 minutes out and your hospital is 15 minutes away. Well, you got to also add the time of unloading the patient, getting the patient indoors, getting the patient through triage. When is the patient going to see a doctor?
Yeah, that's an important, you know, a point, Josh, because I think a lot of people don't think about that when they think of, oh, well, you know, the hospital is less than 10 minutes away. Okay, but I still have to package them in the house, get them out to the ambulance, get them in the ambulance, you know, secure them, get to the hospital, and then, like you say, get them out of the ambulance, you know, into the hospital, get them triaged, get them to a doctor, you know, and all this time goes by, and there's not a lot being done besides, you know, there they are. I took their blood pressure.
Right. And, you know, it the person, the unstable arrhythmia that can
right.
show up as, you know, an irregular heartbeat. Oh, they have an irregular heartbeat and they're talking to me now, so we're good to go. They can last another 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Let me ask you, though, do you think that question gets posed because of the percentage of patients that we get that don't necessarily need an ambulance to begin with? So people kind of get that mentality, you know, of, well, you know, most jobs are BLS anyway.
Yeah, it's sort of a numbers game, I guess it cracks down to. It's unfortunate, but we look at so many things. You know, one of the things that annoyed me tremendously, and this is way off what we were talking about, but I can't remember the senator's name. He was a young guy, early 50s, and he stroked out, and he's a U.S. senator. So they got him to, he got the best of the best health care. Absolutely the best. You know, the Senate, no holds are barred. Yet when it came time to voting for for the states' rights to provide health care and all of this, you know, some of this really highly charged political stuff, but it's affecting the way normal people get to experience, you know, modern medicine. And he voted it down. And it's like, wait, you just got free public health care. You got the very best. You're walking and talking today as a testament to that health care. I mean, this guy was pretty foobar, and they did some amazing stuff both in his surgery, in his hospital care, and in his follow-up therapy and such. And yet he voted down. Now, here's another part. There was you know, the country isn't going through the best of times still. You know, we're getting better, we're getting on the right track, but you know, he voted down extension of unemployment benefits. Now, there are some good people out there, but you know, who can't find jobs and still need to keep a roof over their heads and feed their families. Yet when he was out of work, he got paid the entire time. So I just wonder, you know, where that happens, where we get the justice out of that when the guy who's living off the public, you know, even though he's doing a public service, gets, you know, votes for everybody. It's okay for me to have these benefits, but nobody else. I just had to rant about that for a second. Sorry.
All right, well, I mean, I just don't see, I don't see where, and nobody else doesn't have the same benefits.
Oh, for a U.S. senator, if you're unemployed,
I
you
mean,
don't.
who doesn't, who can't get access to health care if they, if they're unemployed?
Everybody. I mean, yeah, being seen in an emergency room isn't health care. You know,
No,
being
but they, but you get to the emergency room, then they do what's appropriate.
they do what's appropriate, but
If
they
you're having
don't
a
follow
stroke in the
up.
emergency room, you go there without insurance, they're not going to say, go home, you have no insurance.
That well, that's true, but they won't. They your the amount of care that you'll get in the hospital will be limited, and you won't get the follow-up care that
How is it
you need.
limited? I don't understand.
Because it's limited by the difference of staying versus a rapid discharge. And there's all sorts
Well,
of pressures within the
if you're going to get a
hospital.
rapid discharge because you don't require further care, then yeah, then you
Yeah,
get
that's a
discharged.
judgment call, isn't it?
Yeah, the judgment call. Unfortunately, there are situations where you have people, and it doesn't have to be a senator that voted anything. It could be Beyonce or Jay-Z or, you know, any actor out there. If they have a problem, they're having a stroke, and they go to the hospital, they're going to be kept longer to make sure they're not going to have a stroke or any further complications because of their status. I mean, that's just a fact of life. It doesn't matter what you're voting for,
Well,
what you're not
that's not
voting
only their
for, or
status, it's also that their ability to pay for that health care, their ability to be covered for that health care. If you know you have health care right now through your employment, if you go to the you know we're way off topic right now,
no, you went
but
there.
if you go if you go and you need something, as long as they can bill your insurance company, they're going to you know sort of fill out the nooks and crannies of your health care, so to speak. If you're on you know a public reimbursement or no health care type thing, not only do you get billed the full amount, and there's an entire paper on how hospitals bill, but you get billed at a higher rate. I don't know if you were aware of that. So we have more bankruptcies in this country because of health care than for any other reason. 64% of bankruptcies are related to health care. But you're also, your moment to discharge is going to be faster. There's going to be sort of a pressure on everybody to get you out of the hospital with the minimum that you need. You know, there's a level of which, and, you know, there's a level of which the way that we look at healthcare in this country becomes very un, you know, there's supposed to be equal rights for all, and it's a very unequal situation when it comes to healthcare. I mean, even when you have full insurance, you know darn well that somebody, when Beyonce walks into the hospital and needs whatever you need, she's going to get it first. You know, and she's also going to be on the special floor with the, you know, with the special service and everything. And don't kid yourself, your hospital has one of those, you know, because they cater to people who can pay for it. So,
it's a business. It's a business. They want to.
Yeah, and that's sort of where our downfall is when healthcare, which everybody needs, becomes a business that only a few people can have.
No, I mean, a few people can't have it. Everybody can have it.
No, that's not true.
It is true. I've never been denied healthcare. I've never been denied going to the doctor or going to a hospital or anything. Never been denied it. Nobody in my family has ever been denied it. Nobody that I know has ever been denied it.
But you're insured.
Yeah, I'm insured.
Right. But
what's your point?
You,
but I'm not Beyonce.
No, you get to go to the doctor to follow up, you know, but an ER visit is not healthcare. And that's
no, it's not, but people that are on you know, public medical assistance can go for preventive maintenance, preventive care. They just don't. Their mentality is that they don't. That's why the same person that's on, you know, breathing treatments and everything else, and they're sitting there with their Medicaid card, are still chain smoking because they don't give a shit. They don't care about themselves enough.
That's a small percentage of the total people that are on public assistance or public health care. I mean, if you think of Medicare.
Medicare is different. That's, you know,
but that's public health care.
But it's all people that
Medicaid is just a public health care that's been associated, that's been given to somebody who's not of age, any, you know, or doesn't have the means.
Medicaid is for people who you know, it's for people who don't work, who need health care. It's a Medicaid card.
They don't
have health insurance and they're not working. That's the health insurance that you
No, but there's beyond that. It's Medicaid also is below the poverty line. There's a whole bunch of whole bunch of requirements that you have to fulfill in order to get Medicaid. You know, if you lost your job tomorrow, you probably couldn't get Medicaid.
No, right.
You know, whereas
I'm at a certain income bracket.
Exactly. And, you know, when you talk about –
but if I lost my job, you know, for a temporary time frame, mm-hmm. I'm not going to immediately go and get Medicaid or Medicaid.
No,
I'm going to try to get another job. And eventually, if I don't get another job, I will fall below the poverty level, and then I will qualify for that type of
that type of
insurance.
Right. Well, here's John. He's saying that his friend Dee has Medicaid. And, you know, that's a perfect example of somebody who I work the same job but do not qualify. Well, somehow she does qualify. But I don't, you know, look, Jim, I mean, there are certain ends of this that we're going to tangle on this, and we've, you know, on private we've tangled on this. But I don't think it's fair to say that an emergency room visit is medical care. I think when you're talking about medical care, you have to talk about.
But you said that the senator went to rush to an emergency room and was treated. So I'm telling you, the same thing can happen to anybody.
He was rushed to the emergency room. He was treated in the emergency room. And then, of course, he gets the best doctor in the hospital to monitor him, drill a hole in his head, relieve
right, that's for
pressure.
Anybody that, like I said, anyone who ends up being privileged, you know, gets that sort of treatment.
Why is that good for only the privileged? Why
not that it's good for only, it's not that it's good for only the privileged. I'm not saying that it is. I'm just what I'm saying is that you know people are going to get health care. They're going to get treated.
Here's a couple of little factoids. Well, you know, I brought up the one about the bankruptcy, which is just wrong. You shouldn't have to worry about losing your house if you fall on the misfortune.
All right, well, I don't want to start getting into politics, Josh, because I know that you know you're
we don't see eye to eye on that.
Go on to it and
but,
it's
you know,
get into the whole discussion.
But what you know, if we round out, you know, backstep. And not get into the nitty-gritty details of if there should be a public option or how healthcare is run or anything else, but we round about back way to EMS and say, you know, this whole pressure on keeping costs down and keeping things as inexpensive as possible wraps back into the idea of keeping us out in substandard equipment, keeping us out at ridiculously low pay.
Well, because the need for EMS is going to increase the more people get on to, you know, public sort of you know health insurance plans. You know, the need for EMS is going to increase.
Why is the need for EMS going to increase?
Because you're going to have more people that are going to be on, you know, on the dole looking for care. And who's taking care of these people?
I think that's a misconception on your part, honestly.
Okay.
I don't think the vast majority of people who get public health care or Medicare or Medicaid are on the dole. It's, you know, there are a lot of hardworking people out there getting those services. I think, you know, if it's having this discussion with
someone. No, it's not that they're on the dole, but what I'm saying is they're on the public.
But public,
healthcare.
Being on public health care, you know, and having, you know, I've seen enough people who go to the clinics on public health care, have a doctor at the clinic they're assigned to or one or two, and get. Follow-up and maintenance, that word, health care. You know, they maintain themselves. They don't – their health care is not just a visit to the emergency room. They see a doctor. They get their insulin balanced. They get their drugs balanced and things like that. They look up wound – they get wound care and things like that that are not always – that we don't always see those people. We see a great – we see a higher percentage of abusers out of that. You know, because we're the ambulances, but I don't think that because if you would have more people to have a public option would be automatically using ambulances more. I think
they will because there's not enough doctors to take care of them all. There's not enough clinics to take care of everything. So people are going to be like, well, I can't wait. I can't wait a month. To go to the doctor, my stomach is hurting me now.
Your argument is to ration health care by allowing those who have to pay for it be able to pay for it, and those who can't, well, they have an emergency.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, they have health care. It's there. The option is there for them to get help.
Where is the option there? That's what we keep on running in this circle. You keep on saying they have the option for health care. Where? If you're
Gosh, everybody's on. Everyone can go and get health care. If you don't have health care, you can go get health care.
An emergency room visit is not health care.
Oh, my God. Nobody's saying it. I'm not saying it's the emergency room. I'm talking they can go and get health care. They can go on the government and get government assistance to get health care.
Yeah, we just had this conversation. Look, you know what? We just had this conversation. You just said if I went out of a job, let's talk. Forget about you. How about me? Same thing, very similar situation as you. If I went out of, got out of a job, would I be able to get public health care? No, I'd get a trip to the emergency room. That's all that I would get. And because I actually have a home, they'd bill me for it until I lost that home. They bill me and chase me by bill collectors and lawyers until I lost that home and had to declare bankruptcy. So where is that health care?
No, because but at some point, You would qualify.
At some point, they reduce me to such a pile of smoking rubble that they can then give me the free tidbit of a substandard system of public health care. You're absolutely right. I'm sorry. How could I have been so wrong, Jim?
Oh, but how is it substandard? It's the same.
Because it's
the same,
not
emergency
the same.
Room anybody else is going
now,
to.
The emergency room, again, we can't talk about the emergency room because you and I differ. I say the emergency room's not health care. Healthcare is when you can go to your doctor and get a sore throat checked out before it becomes,
right.
You know, a point where, you know, you're going to.
Yeah, the problem is that the problem with that, unfortunately, too, is like Tina said in the chat, is that a lot of doctors and a lot of clinics now are not accepting public health insurance because the reimbursement is shit. So they decide not, you know, to burden themselves with more a larger patient load, and in the end, you know,
some private doctors.
Paid.
Wait. Some private. I haven't found a clinic yet that doesn't take Medicare or Medicaid. In fact, they take it more readily, and every hospital I know takes it more readily than anybody. Every clinic I know. Because that pays out more readily than I have my doctor.
Well, yeah, payment is faster, but it's not as
much. You know what? It's not as much, but it covers the bills. It covers what's been paid for. Again, you know,
it doesn't cover shit. Have you ever seen what they reimburse for ambulance rides?
Yeah.
They reimburse nothing to the ambulance for Medicaid and Medicare. The reimbursement is nothing.
But
it's like $70, $80.
But that's not the point of it is being that, okay, that's for an ambulance ride, but the clinics get reimbursed enough to handle Medicare and Medicaid. My doctor won't take my insurance from my hospital, but he'll take Medicare and Medicaid. So what does that have to say? Medicare and Medicaid are reimbursing better than my private insurance and making it less of a hassle to get reimbursed than my private insurance. The fact is, Medicare and Medicaid, the overhead on running them is 1% of the total cost, whereas private insurance is 30%. As soon as you put in the idea of a profit margin into healthcare, you sort of lost the meaning of what it's meant to take care of the public. And then what happens is we all pay for it because these people go to the emergency room. Sorry, Jim. Maybe we should just get on to another topic because you and I are not going to agree on this.
No,
and that's sort
it's
of
not
what
about agreeing. I just, I don't know.
We have a good show because we're not always of the same mind. And, and that's important. You know, we're not freaking carbon copies of each other. We have independent thoughts. We're in the same business, but, you know, we don't always agree, and this is a case where we don't agree.
All right, well, I'm going to save this recording to this tape because I'm hoping in another 3-4 years I can come back and say to you, are
you
busy,
know,
Josh? How much busier are you on the ambulance?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess you can be a lot busier on the ambulance.
I got news for you. There are several states, and I have to get this. I heard this the other day on a news program. There are several states that have pushed through the other part of the Obamacare or the Public Health Care Affordability Act, and they have found that contrary to what, you know, all the insurance companies and all the lobbyists said, where healthcare and everybody's costs were going to go up, the average consumer's cost went down for their health insurance. Okay? Your cost of what you're paying today to keep you and your family insured would go down if New York would enact the exchanges.
Yeah, but they've already. But my health insurance has already gone up. What I pay for my premiums and stuff has already gone up since that was voted in.
Yeah, because of other things involved in it. But we don't have the things that will cut the costs like the health care exchanges that cause
They backed that up a little bit already. They delayed that until after the election.
Well,
that's how great it is. Listen, I'm going to talk about EMS manager real quick. We're getting a little bit late here in the show, so I want to just go ahead and mention how this episode of EMS Office Hours is sponsored by EMS Manager. They've been consistently helping EMS agencies save time and energy with their innovative web-based software for staff scheduling and management. They have a mobile app. You can get it anywhere from your smartphones or other mobile devices. They have a very easy-to-use web interface and is viewable from anywhere on the World Wide Web. You can check your own schedule, and managers and staff can oversee, manage, and make changes to employee schedules from anywhere. Actually, I saw a testimonial over on the EMS Manager's site where Robert Hinks, he's the EMS director in South Carolina, has said that the EMS Manager system is awesome and that it's been a tremendous burden that was lifted off of his staff, and he finds it very useful and plans to continue to use it in many years to come. So I think that's really saying something. It is affordable too, which is another thing. Pricing for EMS Manager is based on the size of your organization because it is web-based. Your employee schedule and software is located in the cloud, and that means there's no additional IT costs that you're going to have to worry about. And there's always free training. There's also free tech support. There's free system software updates. And if you want to get this for your system, guys, go check it out. It's free. You can get a customizable trial of EMS Manager at emsmanager.net. And I want to thank them personally for sponsoring EMS Office Hours and also the other shows from the ProMed Network. EMS Manager is proud to support EMS providers and managers through the sponsorship and the support of what we do here on the podcast. So go show your support for them, guys. If you are even considering something like this for your agency or know if your agency is looking to do that, go take a few minutes or tell your manager, your supervisor to go take a few minutes and sign up for the free trial at emsmanager.net. Show them you appreciate their support for the show by trying out the software. It's emsmanager.net. It's for Latex EMS Manager for online employee scheduling and workforce management. And don't forget, if you do that, make sure you tell them that you heard it here from Josh and Jim on EMS Office Hours so that they know that's where you guys came from. So I appreciate that. Thanks for listening to my spiel, guys. I know that we got to do some sponsorship stuff, but if you watch this.
Listen, we're grateful to them. They are a sponsor of the show, and it's important.
We did a YouTube video last month. We talked about the sponsors that we try to get on these podcasts and how we don't just turn people down because we don't want to just take anybody. We're trying to take sponsors that we believe in and that we feel are giving value to the EMS.
The community.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm kind of passionate when I talk about it and I kind of plug. I actually did a little video on the blog, for them and pointing out a lot of the highlights and stuff. And, so I don't do that just for anybody. It's the type of thing that I have to believe in order to do it. So go check them out at emsmanager.net. I'd appreciate that. Josh, the other thing, one more topic. It kind of covers two of the articles that I sent you, talking about some of the increase, yet again, of EMS providers being either assaulted, shot recently. And I wonder if this lends more, validation about EMS carrying weapons or not. I mean, I don't know. I wonder what would have happened if the old guy had pulled the gun out, if the EMS provider on the ambulance had a gun, if he would have shot him.
I'd sort of looked at both articles you sent me and reviewed them, and I've seen them before. Sorry about that. And I've seen them before, but I got to tell you, like the elderly guy, he was AMS. I mean, imagine shooting somebody who was AMS, even if he had a handgun.
Right.
And it really brings me up to that point of what the hell were they doing there in the first place?
Yeah, that's the thing I thought, too. Like, wasn't there a cop with them in the back of the ambulance? Wasn't this person patted down before? And that's something I think that a lot of providers don't do or ask the cops to do enough, is to pat down that psych patient. They're voluntary, they're calm, they're not calm, to make sure they don't have a weapon on them, because it's the type of thing where, you know, once they're in the back of the ambulance and you're thinking that any danger is gone, the danger could be sitting in their pocket, you know, could be a knife or a razor or a gun, you know. And I don't think if we had a gun that the answer would be to be sitting there, you know, shooting them dead.
Yeah, no, I don't think that, and it's not a point of self-defense.
Right.
You know, look, a crowded movie theater, somebody shooting, that's a different story. You know, there's a lot of things can be said about gun ownership. But for EMS, you know, there is sort of a mixed signal that gets processed on that. And, you know, I'm sort of thinking that there should be situational awareness. That you should, you know, does stuff happen? No doubt. But, you know, if you're, look, if you get a call and there's an EDP, EDP has a weapon. And for the folks in that are outside of the New York EDP, emotionally disturbed person, you don't go in. You know, it's your job not to go in. You're
right.
Not supposed to go in. So.
Right.
I don't see where, you know, being offensive in a defensive situation is going to solve the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I that's the type of I think issue, I guess, that, you know, is you know, it's that gray sort of area where you'll get people saying, well, you know, if they were armed, that wouldn't have happened. You know, if they had a weapon, maybe that wouldn't have happened. The EMT would have, you know, been armed. They could have done something.
You know, and
but I don't know
how
much I agree with that.
You know, and what does it do to our reputation? Again, you know, everything seems to focus back on our reputation and what we want to achieve out of it. And, you know, we want to achieve a better standing in the community, a better level of professionalism,
mm-hmm.
and or perceived professionalism, and acceptance, and with that, better funding and better pay. Right? It all comes back down to better pay.
Yeah.
I was sort of reading one of the comments that came after the elderly, you know, the guy who was AMS and shot back at the shot at EMS.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he says, you know, we're sort of expected to face down everything from somebody's arm with Windex to a Colt. And it's true. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be a firearm. You know, it
yeah.
could have been a spray bottle. What would happen if the, you know, how much training do they get? How much training do you want to dedicate to EMS? You know,
yeah.
one of the things I know that you want to talk about earlier is, you know, the idea of simulated training and mannequin training and such. And a lot of systems don't have that. And the reason is because they're expensive.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't want it. The systems just don't want to pay the bills for that.
Yeah.
So how much training?
We'll have to get into that in another episode.
But you throw another level on it, Jim, and you say, okay, arm them. Give them that. Well, how much training does a cop get?
Yeah.
And they don't even – they claim most of the time they don't get enough training. And that's a large part of their job. You know,
I mean, in some situations, you know, I guess, you know, if the public knew that you know, the ambulance, you know, personnel were armed or – they might think twice on assaulting them.
Or they might look at us as more as law enforcement
as
of the government
yeah.
and a target.
But then you also have like this old guy that, you know, he's all the mental side. He was, didn't matter what the hell he knew one way or the other, he was going to try, you know, he was going to do something like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And no matter what he knew, if he knew you had a weapon, you didn't have a weapon, or you were Superman and couldn't get hurt, whatever, he was still going to, you know, try to do that. You know, so I think it goes back to, like you said, I think it really relies more on the situational awareness and you know, being aware of your surroundings, having these people, you know, first by the police before they get into the ambulance. You know, I mean, I actually had a call, I want to say maybe 3 months ago or something like that. It was a general psych patient. He was calm, cooperative, got in the ambulance, took him to the hospital, no problems. And we're done. We drop him off in the ER, and I'm doing my paperwork. My partner's making up the stretcher. And one of the cops that was on the scene comes into the ER and goes, Did you guys find a weapon on him?
Did you look?
And I was like, no. I said, I didn't pat him down. I said, I thought you guys did that. And he was like, oh, I thought my partner did, but he didn't. I gotta go pat him down real quick because supposedly he had a gun in the house and we can't find it and we're afraid he's got it with him. And I'm like, all right, good night, everybody.
Right.
I'm here all week.
Right.
You know.
Right. And how did you feel?
I felt relieved that, you know, nothing happened. I was in the back of the ambulance, but at the same time, I'm like, oh my God.
Did you feel like you just missed a close one?
Yeah, well, I felt like, you know, one thing that it did do, though, is something that I'm guilty of, and I think a lot of other people out there end up being guilty of, too, is that you get a certain amount of complacency,
mm-hmm.
and you don't always have the situational awareness that you should because the patient's calm, they're cooperative, they're not being an ass. You know,
I think one of the big assumptions,
in a confrontational.
The big assumption on our part, which is a mistake, so many times. I mean, really, every time you hear about EMS being assaulted, this is where the mistake has happened. It's because we present to the patient what we think is a non-threatening response, a non-threatening environment, non-threatening response. Why would you want to hit somebody who's not threatening you?
Yeah.
But that's exactly the point. That's sometimes why they're patients. Because they want to hit people who aren't threatening them.
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, I know a friend of mine, Steve Whitehead, did an article over in EMS1. He talked about, you know, not being the guy not being the confrontational provider. You know, where you're yelling at the patient, you know, to calm down or whatever. And he gave some good tips on that article to, you know, on how to handle some of these patients that are very agitated and uncooperative and stuff like that. And that, you know, yelling at them to calm down is not quite what you should be doing to prevent, you know, getting further immersed, you know, in the situation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, listen, there are things that go on out there and situations that happen where you really can't control it. It explodes, and you're in a small work environment in the back of the ambulance or in a back bedroom or some house somewhere, and, you know, the shit hits the fan. And no matter how much situational awareness you have or how much preparation you have, you find yourself in that position, you know, of protecting yourself or, you know, your partner or something, or even the patient, depending upon what the situation is,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think there are a lot of courses out there that, again, we talk about things like simulation and stuff. It goes back to cost, where there are a lot of courses out there on you know, not self-defense, but, you know, the situational awareness and knowing how to quickly get out of a situation like that and not get injured, you know. But agencies don't have the money to pay or don't find the need enough, you know, to find the funding to pay for that type of training for their personnel. It doesn't happen often enough, you know,
right.
as opposed to, you know, other things that we do that they feel is more important to do. But I do think that a lot of agencies nowadays are getting a lot more into doing things like, you know, like the shooter type scenarios and
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. I
well,
see a lot of agencies getting involved in that because that seems to be something that is becoming more commonplace, unfortunately.
Well, there's also, you know, agencies sort of respond to where the federal grant money goes. And, you know,
yeah,
I've always said, you always said, yeah, you know, you have a question about something, follow the money. You know, so there's a lot more since there's been these very publicized active shooter engagements, these very publicized school shootings, it's become an issue of the general public, and therefore it gets funded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets as the local organizations say, hey, we want something done about this, money gets funneled that way. You know, and that's what I've said a long time about, you know, if you work in EMS and you want better pay, well, you know, don't blame yourself and don't blame your partner and don't even blame your boss. You know, call up your local representative and say, hey, you know, we count. You know, we need better pay. And whether that better pay actually equals to dollars an hour, which it should as well, but it should also equal to better training, better equipment.
Yeah.
You know, not
it's all encompassing. That's the problem, you know.
It's all what?
It's all encompassing. It all kind of, everything ties in together.
It comes, yeah, and it comes down to, you know, that that aspect of, you know, we want to be a lot of, I think the vast majority of EMS really want to put a professional foot forward, really want to be out there, be seen by the public as professionals, be seen as, you know.
And I think, they want the public to know what we do and what we're capable of doing, not what they think we know, you know, doing CPR or, you know, rushing them off to a hospital, you know what I mean? I think they want the public to know more of what we're doing. You know, Josh, listen, I want to end it there because I don't get too much into another topic. I think one topic I do want to discuss, and I think maybe we'll do that next week. We'll pick it up, and I want to talk about that article from EMS1, I think it was, when they talked about what we've been mentioning about being more in the public space, being more louder about what we do, and not being that silent third service. You know, when it comes to emergency services and what the public knows we do and don't do, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll pick that up next week.
Great topic.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about that next week, a little bit, focus on that, and, you know, see where we go with that. So I do want to mention a couple of Twitter followers this week. I don't have too many new ones this week, so I'm kind of bummed out. But I do have Perry D., Anthony B., and David Webb, all new Twitter followers. Go check them out on Twitter. Tell them that I sent you. We are on Twitter at EMS Safe. Josh, you're on Twitter at Wantin' New, of course.
We ain't nothing till you need us.
So go follow us on Twitter if you do have a Twitter account. You know, stay in touch with us there. Don't forget to sign up on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ EMS Office Hours.
Or Josh, the EMS Professional on Facebook, or Want New on Facebook.
Yeah, we're over the place.
So, we are. We're out there. Josh, you can't get in touch with us. It's your fault.
Yeah, exactly. Josh, anything you want to mention before we head out?
No. You know, I mentioned this last week. I got a new shipment of pouches in, so the pouches are available again. So please, don't delay. If you're thinking of getting one, get one before they go out, because they're custom made and they're very made in very small quantities.
Yes, I definitely say that. So, all right, listen, let's end it there. I see, I just saw EMS Roundtable, and I guess Rami Duckworth popped in for a minute. I wanted to give him a shout out. I don't know how long he was there. Anyway. All right, we'll end it there so we don't get too much into anything else. Josh, thanks. I appreciate it. And we'll see you next week.
All right, Jim. Take care. Stay safe.
All righty. All right, everybody. Any questions, comments about the show, be sure to post them in the comments below here on Blog Talk Radio or over on the blog at emsofficehours.com. Any suggestions for a show, send them over to me. My email is jhoff@emsseo.com. I'd love to go ahead and make a show based on something that you're concerned about or interested in EMS. So until next week, guys, as always, Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.